Well, good day, everyone. This is Rick with Spinal Network, and it's been a while. We had a bit of a hiatus, but the Spinal Network podcast series is going to resume effective immediately, and we have a very good friend of mine, Bob Vogel, here today with us, and we're going to just have a good time and chat and probably get a, you know, a laugh or two or three or four in there, but anyway, you know, Spinal Network, go to www.spinal-network.org. There's all sorts of fun stuff on there. And you'll also find the link to all of the platforms that we use for our podcast, whether it be Spotify or Apple or whatever. And you'll get a chance to see all of our podcasts, find something, you know, or start with the first one and just binge right through them. So anyway, I am a 68-year-old male, wear glasses, wearing a blue shirt. And for all intents and purposes, I have no hair. And especially as you're looking through this this filter that I'm using. And I'm a spinal cord injury, a paraplegic spinal cord injury back in 1976. So I've been around the block half a dozen times or so. But anyway, that's me. And I'm going to let Bob introduce himself.
Hey, thanks, Rick. I am a 63-year-old and actually just a few weeks as well. I think we were talking about that. Our birthdays are pretty close. Male and also wearing glasses and with the thinning hair. And I am just about a month and a half ago had my 38th year, entered my 38th year as a paraplegic. I'm a T10 complete. Time goes by quick when you're having fun, I tell you. Who'd ever thought?
That's the truth.
Yeah. And the way I as I like to say it, the way I joined the wheelchair using club was prior to my injury. I was a professional freestyle snow skier, doing aerial acrobatics and mogul skiing, and also a had just broken into the Hollywood stunt business. In fact, I have one major title to my name, and I was living my dream, and I was and planned to do this pretty much in one way or another the rest of my life, be in the kind of the stunt in the ski industry, and one, you know, just took one jump a little too high, a little too far, and landed on my shoulders instead of my feet, and you know, next thing you know, like any of us, kind of went through the whole rehab process and everything. I consider myself very fortunate that I had a lot of good friends and family around when that happened. I also had phenomenal rehab. I can't speak highly enough. To this day, I still remember a lot of the things I use in rehab, and they've helped me stay relatively healthy. Since then, I've also had a great life. I went from a high school dropout, earned my bachelor's degree, and got way back into sports, and have done everything from hang gliding and flying my hang glider at 20,000 feet. And I competed a couple times, competed in the World Hang Gliding Aerobatics Championships, sailed a bunch of different boats, both on my own as well as crewed with other people, rode hand cycles, helped start. I was one of the early people in the off-road adaptive hand cycle world. I'm a rescue scuba diver, just kind of, you know, love to travel, have adventure. I'm a dad of an amazing 22-year-old daughter. That's been my biggest adventure and my most rewarding. So it's, and I'm also I've been in the industry as a manufacturer's rep for wheelchair manufacturers, as a dealer's rep, wheelchair dealer's rep. And for the last 20 years, I've been a journalist for New Mobility Magazine. And I write everything from information columns on spinal cord injury and health to columns on travel, sports, adventure, interesting people. Last but not least, I'm an ambassador for Motion Composites wheelchairs. So that's and I'll just stop it there because I could go on for days. Enough about me. How about me?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we've known each other, gosh, for a long, long time.
Since about 88, I think.
Yeah. I was with in marketing for Everest and Jennings. And we had come out with that new custom chair, the Impulse.
Yeah.
And I remember you came in and I still remember it was you came in, it was you and myself, Paul Friedrich. It was Paul Friedrich's office, the engineer, and Bob, and I can't remember Bob's last name, another engineer, he was there.
Bob Clark Bob or another Bob?
No, it was another Bob.
Okay.
Another Bob, yeah, because I remember Paul and Bob, myself, and there was another young kid who was an engineer, and we used to, once or twice a week, we'd go out and play tennis when we were living out there in the Camarillo area. But it's interesting, as you were talking, I said, we've known each other a long time, but there, you mentioned some things and I went, wow, I didn't know that. But I do remember the movie you were in was Hot Dog, the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Remember that.
Siskel and Ebert voted it the worst movie of the week. And I think I may be wrong on this. Probably am wrong, but I never let the facts get in the way of a good story. Okay. Yeah, I think at one point it had the record for the highest grossing versus least money spent to make a movie.
I saw the movie.
Awesome 80s, horny teenagers and skis, yeah, and hot tubs kind of thing.
Hot tubs, yeah. What rehab? You mentioned you had great rehab.
I was injured up in Canada. So I did my first kind of month of intensive care and everything at Royal Victoria in Montreal, Canada, which was a phenomenal place. They saved my life. And then I had my choice, basically my dad being a hospital administrator, he looked at what are the best rehabs in the North American continent. And so I chose Santa Clara Valley in San Jose. They had a great reputation and also it was the closest to home. So that's where I did my inpatient. And to people that are new to this lifestyle, back in the day when you were injured, you stayed in inpatient rehab until you maximized your recovery, however long that took. So that meant you got all the information, which, I remember I was motivated. I think I'm a pretty intelligent guy, and just learning about the whole trying to avoid pressure injuries and take care of bowel and bladder and avoid infections and all that stuff, and trying to learn how to do transfers. I worked my butt off. I was just like their model patient, and I was there 6 weeks and they thought, wow, we can't believe you're ready to go home this fast. This is just beyond description. And from what I understand now, the average length of stay for somebody my level of injury, paraplegic, is only 21 days.
It's horrible.
Yeah, that's I don't know if I would have made it. I would have, but it would have been all of that extra information I learned in rehab has, to this day, I still check my butt with a mirror every night, make sure there's no redness and stuff. That's knock on wood, never say never, but that's what's enabled me to avoid pressure injuries and that kind of stuff.
I ended up of course, I was injured in Massachusetts, in Western Mass, and there was no rehab there. First of all, I was at, in the trauma center at Bay State Medical Center in Springfield, Mass. And they looked at the x-rays and they thought, oh, look, he's got this aortic, aneurysm, and it's ready to blow. So, we're going to send him somewhere else. So they were going to either helicopter me to a rehab in Hartford, Connecticut, but they didn't have any room. So they instead put me in an ambulance and drove me to Tufts Medical Center in Boston. And the Mass Turnpike, which is really the only road to get there, you know, unless you want to spend days, was under construction.
Okay.
It took, instead of an hour and a half, it was more, you know, 2.5 to 3 hours. And, you know, I just kept listening to the heart monitor all the way. And there were times when I used to go, my gosh, it stopped. I'm dying. You know, and it was just probably the drugs. I don't know. But got there and they, you know, they checked and they realized, though, that was just a shadow on the x-ray. There is no aortic aneurysm. But it worked out because, you know, all of a sudden I was in, at least in a, you know, in a good solid trauma center. And but they didn't have any
x-rays.
Well, they didn't have any rooms. So the solarium on that floor became my room.
Wow.
So I was on a Stryker frame, one of the old canvas Stryker frames. And, you know, they put a little bell, you know, there. So that if I, you know, on the table next to me, in case I needed them, since there was no call button. And yeah, it was just crazy. I still remember I used to have these three nursing students used to come and visit me every afternoon, you know, and it was great. I mean, I just looked forward to it. It was all of a sudden it was, you know, some company, and it was, you know, people close to my age. But my mom was driving back and forth every day, you know, 90 something miles each way. So when I had a choice of rehab, I could have rehabbed there, but I thought, you know, that somebody, you know, she's driving, chances are something's going to happen. You drive back, you're tired, whatever. So I declined that option, went back, and the rehab I was at was primarily stroke. And I was the third cord injury that they had ever seen. And it's interesting because I worked at that hospital, you know, just a little bit before I had the accident. So I knew a bunch of people there. Well, and I worked in transportation. So anything that needed to be moved, we moved it, including people. And the rehab part was a separate building that was ancient. And I just remember, oh, you need to go over and we need to bring this patient, Ray Stoddard, over to x-ray. Two of us get in the van, we drive over, go up, get him on the gurney, bring him down, put him in, drive him over. And you know, Ray was a, you know, was a T4 spinal cord injury. And it's funny because it was almost a year later, exactly a year later, that all of a sudden I was a patient here and he was coming in to visit me.
Wow.
So yeah, it was just weird. But anyway.
But that reminds me, I imagine you and I never talked about that, but I would imagine for you, like me, I was had an acquaintance, not necessarily a friend yet, but an acquaintance that was a hang glider pilot who was a T6 para. And I, you know, for people nowadays, they don't realize that the active lightweight chair, that wasn't even introduced until really the late 70s. So if you were her,
well, actually it was,
or what
quickie,
was it?
It was a quickie. Well, there was Quadra was the end of the 70s with quickie, the beginning of the 80s. Cause yeah, my first chair was a folding E&J steel chair that even if I took the arms off it and all sorts of stuff, was still 50 pounds.
Yeah. And so anyway, point being is a couple of years prior to my injury, I was already a hang glider pilot, and some friends of mine were going to community college and they were into bicycle racing. And so they met this guy there and they were saying, oh man, we met this guy and he's got these huge arms and he's got this wheelchair and it's made out of like all aluminum. It's custom. It was one of the original quickies. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, it's like our, it's cooler than our bike. And this guy's got Phil Wood hubs on his rear wheels. That's just awesome. You know, if I ever get paralyzed, I want Phil Wood hubs. And this guy hang glides, you know, you might run into him. And then I met him at a hang gliding site. And at first I was kind of bashful. Like I didn't want to come up and say, are you the paralyzed guy that my friends at school saw? But we kind of got to know each other. And then when I was injured and going through rehab, he came and visited me a few times. And you know, he's like got arms like trees, and he'd just sit there and just say, hey, you know, listen to what they say. They know what they're doing, and get your butt out of here and, you know, just get busy living. And then he'd look out the window and he'd say, oh, the flying looks good. I'm sorry, I got to go. And he just like blast out of there. And it was almost like, you know, a movie or something. His car, just the handicapped parking was right in front of the room that I was in. I'd see him just, you know, in a matter of less than a minute, he'd throw his chair in the car and the hang gliders on the top of the roof. And he just blast off. And I'd say, well, man, you know, he's having a great life. Okay. And that was, to me, that was a big deal. And one of the things I would encourage anybody, if you're a new injury, or even if you've been injured a while, is, you know, find cool peers to hang with.
Yeah.
Not because they're in a chair, but if you find cool people that also happen to be wheelchair users, you can learn a lot of cool life hacks. That was super important for me. He helped me modify my glider to get wheels on it and everything. And he helped me, he helped find able-bodied people to launch me on my first launch, one of my first flight. And today, I mean, I just, you know, Spinal Network and everything, they've got such great peer support on there. And I, you know, 38 years later, I still learn things from my peers, you know. I'm very fortunate that I have a lot of friends. A lot of them happen to be wheelchair users. And, you know, something like, dang, that's never happened. Call up my butt. You ever have blah, blah, blah? Oh, yeah. And you know, unfortunately now it's more of the quest, you know, more of our phone stuff is, hey, you know, did your shoulder ever make this noise or hurt here or whatever. But I find it super cool to just be able to bounce that off friends that have gone through it. And then also they're usually the ones, hey, this doc is really knowledgeable and he or she really knows their stuff. This person, no personality, but if you got to have surgery, they're the ones.
This one, a lot of personality.
I wouldn't let them near me with a knife if I was bleeding to death. So that kind of stuff is, I find it's been vital in my early days of just accepting and moving on. But still, I enjoy, you know, I hope I have some wisdom. I enjoy passing that on. And again, I'm always I'll call you too. I was just asking you last week about vans, because that's something that, you know, I'm realizing maybe time to get a ramp here. You know, it's like, don't try to save those extra few transfers of in and out of the car kind of thing.
Yep. It's, I get asked just, the weird thing is when you're in those, I'm coming up on 47 years, there's not a whole lot of people around with more, you know, that are, you know, with 50 plus years.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I could go, hey, you know, have you dealt with this? You know, so, but I always seem to find somebody, you know, sometimes, because it's not necessarily, so I'm coming up on 47. Yeah, I mean, you're going to, you know, you'll get people that are, you know, that, you know, maybe 40 years post-injury that have dealt with things that I haven't dealt with. But yeah, I mean, and I get, you know, I'll be listening to somebody and this guy, Mike, the quad, and we were chatting, he was going through just horrendous time with his bowel program.
Oh yeah, that's
the worst. Yeah, and he goes, you know, and it just hemorrhoids and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, such a, you know, people are like, oh my gosh, you guys talk about that. Well, yeah, because you know, it's reality. And I told him, so I said, Mike, I'm going to send you the name of somebody, you know, Dr. Bard Cosman down at, you know, UCSD in San Diego. You need to call this guy and you need to set up an appointment. You need to get in to see him, because out of all the docs that I've had, this guy is head and shoulders above the rest with his understanding of spinal cord injuries, you know, everything from you go in and they're going to get you on the table. He goes, we've done this a lot. I have a lift team. We're skilled, we're experienced. You just relax. And I went, okay. And boom. They had me up on that. They did it perfect. You know, I mean, he wanted to make sure every aspect of your visit, you know, you were going to be comfortable, you know, and feel confident. Great doc. And I tell people, they said, what advice can you give? Well, you know, there's all sorts of advice you can give a new injury.
Yeah. However, what do you want to know?
yeah, I know. And I said that there's two things you really need to focus, you know, that you should make sure that you do. One is make sure you find a good urologist.
Absolutely.
Someone who understands spinal cord injuries, but someone that you develop, there's a connection. You feel a connection with this. I mean, I've had good urologists. There was no connection. And I would not stay. I mean, I went in search of. You know, I found one, maybe 10 years ago, you know, Richard Connor, right here in Murrieta. And we just connected. And he understands cord injuries. You know, we'll go in there and we're laughing and joking. And, you know, but this guy, since going to him, I mean, everything's been cool, you know. So, and the other is you need to find a good physiatrist. And I'll tell you,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, that word, you know, I went to my, now that I went from a PPO to an HMO,
yeah,
so you had to get a referral. So, you know, I told my GP, you know, I need this referral for a physiatrist. You know, this is the woman at the desk. Next, you know, I get a referral that came in for a podiatrist. And I said, no, you know, yeah, I'm seeing a podiatrist already. You know, that's my feet. This is not what I'm talking about. Talking about a doctor of physical and rehabilitative medicine, you know, and I only want to see them once or twice a year, but I need to see them and they need to be somebody who understands cord injuries. You know, I used to see Dr. Andrew Skalski at Children's Hospital. I always used to joke that I was probably the oldest kid. And he assured me I wasn't, but he did an adult clinic once a month. But he, you know, he ended up on our board when we first started Spinal. Well, at the time, it wasn't even Spinal Network. It was the Southern California chapter of the National Spinal Cord Injury Association, which changed to the Southern California chapter of United Spinal Association. And a wise man, God rest his soul, he's passed on, but Morris Casuto sat across me at a restaurant. And when I told him that, he goes, just had that smile on his face. He goes, doesn't fit on a pen, does it? And I thought he was joking. And then the light bulb came on. And it doesn't. People aren't going to remember that. You know, so they either, the Southern California chapter, of what? Of United Spinal Association. Oh, so you're the United Spinal chapter. So we had no identity. So 2018, we changed it to Spinal Network. And, you know, it took a couple of years to get that out. But I mean, now you say Spinal Network in San Diego and people know what we're talking about. So yeah, it's a...
What's interesting, you mentioned that because I, again, I have quite a few friends from that also at various times of their life went through Santa Clara Valley. And there was, I'm sure he's long retired now, but there was a urologist there, Dr. Anderson, that it was just, you know, genius clinician, mm-hmm. but he would also just talk to you, how's your life? You know, mm-hmm. you know, how's your sex life? How's this? How's that? I mean, he mm-hmm. would just talk and just kind of put the whole thing together. And since then I've found, up here, I found an amazing, urology nurse practitioner. And she's gotten, you know, figured out all kinds of tricks to, I've only had one bladder infection in the last 9 years. And before that, you know, I went through a series of fighting quite a few. So there, yeah. there's, yeah. And again, yeah, all of that stuff. As we're talking though, I definitely find that, talking with peers, whether it's the United Spinal / Spinal Network, peer group, I will, up here, the United Spinal person that leads our local chapter is Char Vine. And I'll call Char and I'll say, hey, you know, do you know any shoulder surgeons around, or does anybody in the group know shoulder surgeons? I'm trying to find somebody that, you know, knows their salt, and, you know, A, can they fix me? And mm-hmm. right now I'm trying to find out, you know, figure out, can it be fixed, and which way do I go? You know, do I, yeah. it's kind of a, I'm at that area where with my age and big rotator cuffs, is it worth trying to fix the tendons? The tears are so bad that they don't have a lot of really good success. It's only about 30 to 40% failure in able-bodied people. So it's, you know, do I get the full replacement kind of thing? And at least I'm running into other people that have had it done and who did it and how'd it work and you know, and, you know, who are the top people and who to avoid and listening to different people's stories, versus, you know, to me, that's, a great addition to a good, yeah. you know, a good
yeah.
doctor.
Oh, it's, yeah. Yeah.
Having it's like a holistic should be spelled WHOLE.
Yeah.
yeah. Use the doctor's yeah. knowledge, use your friends and peers' knowledge. And
yeah. Yeah. It's, and that's one of the things we try to do with our peer program, the peer support part of it. Which is interesting because when we would say, okay, you know, the second or the first and third Monday of the month, we're doing a peer support group, and we'd get just a few people there. And so I talked to some people that, you know, how come you don't join us on Mondays? Well, it's a peer support group. Well, I know. Well, I don't need that. Ah, so we changed it to the Monday hangout.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
And, yeah. and we do the same exact thing. We yeah. just changed the name, and all of a sudden now we get those people.
Yeah.
Well, oops, oops. If you're listening to this, I didn't say that. Keep coming on Mondays. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you know, we focus on getting new injuries, especially, and not just new injuries, but more so new injuries to build and develop your own network, your own peer network.
Yeah,
because it's invaluable.
And there's so many different aspects to that too. I mean, I have certain groups of my peers that I know through sports. I mean, some of them are through, you know, some of them are through adaptive cycling and then, mm-hmm. You know, just, or you name it, or adventure kind of stuff or adaptive skiing. And then I know others just through journalism and, it is kind of interesting. If I do have some information that some I feel can help somebody, that feels really cool. I mean, there's no better feeling than helping somebody out.
Yeah.
But I don't know. At 38 years, I'll be the first to admit I don't know everything, and I'm always happy to. There's been a few times. Well, actually, if it wasn't for me listening to friends, I wouldn't have a right leg. Cause, in 2000, I broke my hip and, I had, pins put in it and everything went well, but, it's a long story, but the pins came out. The surgeon did a perfect job. The surgeon just didn't have any information on dealing with a spinal cord injured person. So I said, what are my restrictions? I want to make sure this heals well. He says, no restrictions. He says, I get 85-year-old ladies and they have this kind of fracture. I puts in pins in, I'm walking that day. Well, what he didn't think about was that 85-year-old ladies, the muscles are always pulling the hip together.
Yeah.
There's never anything pulling apart. And just dumb luck, the next week, We got a different bed that was higher and a van that I had to transfer into the front seat. So there's two different transfers I'm doing all day where I'm lifting up and the leg is hanging there.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it was 3 or 4 weeks later. So that everything was great for 4 weeks. And then at week five, the thing came apart. And I said, what are my options now? And he says, well, we could do an artificial hip or we could do a girdle stone, which I didn't even know that was. It sounded barbaric. You take the ball, you take the ball out and then you just smooth the end of the femur around and you wrap the muscle around there. It's what they used to do before artificial hips. And I just went, oh, that's no way. I'd die before I did that. I said, give me an artificial hip. How soon can you do it? And he says, well, I could do one by next Wednesday, a week from today. And I didn't want to think about it. I just like, I'm doing it. This is too scary. Thankfully a couple wheelchair users had looked at this kind of thing and they said, you really need to ask some more and, find a spinal cord specialist surgeon, blah, blah, blah. And literally at the last minute from all my peers pushing me to do that, because I really didn't want to, because I was scared what I would find out. I had a really good friend that's a PM&R intern, mm-hmm. and he managed to kind of sneak me in the back door and get me into an old school orthopedic surgeon that understood spinal cord injuries. And so I told him, hey, what's going on here? I'm scheduled to do an artificial hip in 2 days. I just wanted a second opinion. He says, and this was 2000. So mm-hmm. he says, yeah, I'll tell you right now, if you go for that artificial hip, I would put money on you're going to probably lose your leg within a year. And he says, first of all, the restrictions we have on these now, the most you can flex is sitting up straight. So if you lean forward in your chair, you probably dislocate it. He says, there's all these possibilities of complications. And so then he explained the whole girdle stone thing to me. And he says, I know it sounds barbaric. Mm-hmm. He says, you know what? It's a big surgery, but it's your best option. And I mean, literally this was 2 days before I had this big surgery. And so the artificial hip. And so I went with the girdle stone and that's, what are we, 20, probably almost three decades later. And it's worked out fantastic. It's worked out really well. And as a side, nowadays under the right circumstances, they make different types of artificial hips with a larger ball mm-hmm. and a longer stem. So under the right circumstances and a skilled surgeon that knows spinal cord injury, an artificial hip in a paralyzed individual may be appropriate.
Yeah.
You have to know somebody that really knows the whole. I wrote an article about it, New Mobility, so you can look that up, Bob Vogel.
I remember us talking because, I would, it's interesting because, 92. I remember I was seeing this doc who was doing some work I was working at the VA. He was working at the VA, but he was also doing some work at Sharp. So that's where I connected with him, is I was able to use him through Sharp. And, he did this MRI and it turns out that, he goes, oh, you've got this syrinx and he just kind of mentioned it. And I never pursued it, just thinking, oh, okay. And years and years and years and years and years
for went for your listeners, syrinx.
Yeah.
I've written about it.
And that's where we connect, because you said, I wrote about this. I started to see somebody at San Diego and they wanted to, we'll just put a shunt in. And that's where, that's where we were chatting.
Oh, I had forgotten about that. Yeah.
And it was like, well, here are there's chance of infection and every so many years you have to get it redone. And I'm saying, I don't want like a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. You know, I want this, I want to fix. And the guy at, I can't remember the doc's name at Craig, who's done probably 1,000 of these things.
Yeah. And it's actually, he's at Scottish Rite, and it's Dr. Scott with one T, Scott, S-C-O-T, F-A-L-C-I. And he's still
Scottish Rite
practicing, okay. And he's still, you know, one of the top guys. Yeah, Scottish Rite right there in Inglewood, Colorado, right down the street from Craig. Yeah. In fact, well, that's, if you look up my name in New Mobility, I've written two different columns that I'm very proud of. Written a lot of one of them ran for many, many years, and it's called Bladder Matters. I think it ran from 2008 to 2012. And I looked at everything I could find having to do with a bladder management and spinal cord injury, everything from bladder infections to bladder augmentation to different kinds of catheters to, I mean, anything you could, including things to watch out for. And but then the other one I did after that was called para/medic, kind of a, you know, play on words. I'm a paraplegic and I'm providing medical information, not advice.
Yeah.
And where I would just look at different things that can be unusual with spinal cord injury. Some of it because of spinal cord injury, other times it's just it's an unusual thing, and spinal cord injury maybe makes it harder to troubleshoot. Like your average guy should be getting a prostate exam, but I would say probably, I bet you at least 50 to 60% of guys with spinal cord injury haven't gotten a prostate exam every year. You know, it's the doctor's, oh, you know, no bladder infections, good to go out the door.
Yeah.
So yeah, one of the things I wrote about was, syrinx. And so what that is wherever your injury is, if it's a actual injury on the cord, even if it's just, you know, kind of got smashed or whatever, more than likely there's some scar tissue there. And it's quite common at some point, anywhere 6 months after the injury up through, you know, who knows, 50 years after the injury, you could, that scar tissue, fluid is supposed to flow up and down the spinal cord. That scar tissue can stop the fluid from flowing up and down, and then it creates a cyst. Well, that cyst itself, if it just sits there, it's fine. And but sometimes that fluid starts to build and the cyst can grow. And even there, it's not necessarily a problem, but it can be a problem, because if it starts pushing out, you can start to lose sensation higher and higher and movement higher and higher, and it can cause pain and sweating. And it can be really, really horrendous. And it's to fix it properly, it's about a 12 to 14 hour super complex surgery, where a surgeon needs to open up the spine itself and go in there and, with, you know, basically a microscope, detether, take the, you know, like one nerve at a time. I'm making this up, just what I think. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. You know, carefully take that scar tissue out. And as you and I were discussing, you'll see some doctors that they see the syrinx and they say, oh, you know, we got to get in there immediately tomorrow and get this out and put a shunt in, or you're going to die. And then even the shunt, as this Dr. Fauci said, most of the time, let's just say a great deal of the time, when he detethers everything right on this table, he sees the syrinx just kind of go away. And he says sometimes he still does need to do a shunt, but you really should detether. So it's very complex.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he also, it's such a complex surgery, he says, if you're not having any symptoms, don't worry about it. And he says, I've had patients call in and say, yeah, my doctor says, if I don't get this thing done by next week, I'm going to just keel over. And he says, what are your symptoms? Nothing. He says, then why, you know, like, he's just very nice. It's not causing you problems. Just, you keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
But that's it. And even there, he'll say, what are your symptoms? And, oh, I've got extra spasms. And then he'll say, this is what I remember from interviews. He'll say, well, let's first try some antispasmodic medicines, or maybe even a what is it, a baclofen pump. He says, you know, let's try some simple things. If we manage your symptoms, then we can avoid a 12-hour surgery and 2 weeks flat on your back and X amount of recovery. So he's, I just like the fact that it's great when you get one of those amazing surgeons that, or amazing doctors in any field that knows the ins and outs and when to do something aggressive and when to just back off and watch. That's the real magic there.
Yeah. You know, and here was, this was my, and my thought, and, you know, and, you know, most people would go, what? If you're a cord injury or a wheelchair, if you're a wheelchair user and, you know, and this, you're facing a surgery like this and you're facing the amount of downtime, to me, one of the very first questions that pops into my head, well, how do you do your bowel program during a 2 week process, you know, rehab, or, you know, where you're really on your, you know, you're laid up for 2 weeks.
How part of a shoulder. How do you do it in 3 months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, I have answers because I know people that have gone through it. I mean, with shoulders, you essentially, if you're an active para for that three to 6 month period where you're not supposed to use that one arm at all, you're essentially a quad. You have an attendant that's doing it, so you're doing your bowel program the same way a C5 or C4 quad does it. That's one of those things that I'm looking at. Looking at my shoulders, I'm fortunate that I've got good movement now, but they're getting awfully sore, and I know how much damage is done in there. So I did find a surgeon in this area that said he would do it. And he does professional baseball pitchers and stuff. So I like the fact that he's very frank, and he says, you need to think long and hard on whether or not you want this done. I said, well, can you do it? And he says, I can. He says, however, we have zero data on you guys, i.e., wheelchair users that are transferring that are with your body, you know, with your arms lifting it. You know, I weigh 135, 140, lifting 140 pounds 4 to 6 times a day minimum doing transfers. He says, we don't know how that holds up. There's no data. And he says, in the able-bodied population, like I say, when you go over a certain age and a large tear, it's not that great. And he says, I'll do it. He says, but I don't want to promise you that you're going to come out of this, you know, being 35 again. He says, it may be better. It may completely fall apart, you know, which, not what I wanted to hear, but I'd rather hear, you know, the straight up truth beforehand than, oh yeah, I was going to tell you that, but I didn't want to make you feel bad. Yeah. We just give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for, you know, those of us, and thank you for turning me on to this, but we're using, say, the Peristeen system, you know, for our program, you know, which is so much easier, but still, if you're flat on your back or just, you know, you're lying, I don't know if you'd be always flat on your back or whatever.
On your side for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and you have somebody doing it, that's great, but still, I mean, how are they doing it if you're in bed?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting you mention that, because I've talked with people, it's like, you know, man, how did you do that the first 3 months? And everybody's different. But, you know, I've talked with people, and, you know, just to get graphic, they said, man, it's like the old school, that first couple weeks or first month you're in rehab, they just put a bunch of the big blue chucks underneath you, roll you on your side, you know, do the whole deal. And you're just sitting there, feeling like you're back in an acute care rehab again.
And the fact that they, you know, that facility has that doctor there who's done so many of them, you know, there's no second thought on their part. They know.
Yeah.
Okay. This is okay. Here it is. So, you know, that's, and we've known, I mean, Candace had it done, didn't she?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know a lot of people that have gone through shoulder
repair. Did Kylie get it done then?
Yeah.
On the syrinx part.
Let me rephrase that, because there's another thing. This is a good one for anybody that's got horrendous neuropathic pain. Mm-hmm. So there's a surgery. Same guy. There's people around the country that do it, but Dr. Fauci is another very well known person. It's called Dres surgery. So if you have horrendous quote phantom pain, that burning pain in your mm-hmm. legs, feet, neuropathic pain, there are people that it just gets so bad that you're like, I want to cut my legs off. Well, problem is that wouldn't help anything. You cut them off, it would still be there. Mm-hmm. And so there's a surgery where they open up the spine and they've got some kind of some kind of device where they can figure out which nerves are creating that pain, because it's a real nerve sending it to the brain, but it's just mm-hmm. not coming from the leg. It's coming right from somewhere in the spine. And so they isolate those nerves. And again, it's probably a 12-hour surgery, and they just figure out which nerve is firing. And they take a radio thing and they zap that specific nerve, and then they go to nerve two. Okay, that one's creating the pain signal, and they zap that nerve. And I know in the case of Candace, she had just such horrendous nerve pain that, she was just beside herself. I mean, having to do anything and just mm-hmm. couldn't handle it. And she said when she got out of surgery, hours and hours after the surgery, she thought that she was just like, she goes, wow, how much morphine are you giving me? And they go, what do you mean? She says, my legs don't hurt at all. And they said, well, actually, we have not given you any morphine in the last 8 hours. Welcome to your new normal. And from what I hear from Dave Kiley, same thing. And he had a real difficult decision because he's incomplete, meaning he's got movement in his legs. I think he can do some ambulation
short leg, I think they are.
So with his, it's like, well, you may lose that ability. Is this worth it? And his pain just got so bad, from what I hear from him, he says, I'd rather lose whatever movement I have to get rid of this pain.
Yeah.
And the doctor, again, this Dr. Fauci, he was able to, and he said, I'm not promising anything. He says, I'm going to try. No guarantee. He was able to get rid of all the pain. And from what I understand, he retained all his movement ability. Nice. Now, that may not work out the same with somebody else, but still, again, with that neuropathic pain, mine comes and goes. And knock on wood, it's been on the ebb for quite a while now. I think it's because of my new girlfriend. So it's like when you're happy, it somehow I think there's a lot of things that play into it, but high stress and boredom or whatever can certainly exacerbate anything. Mine's been on vacation for a while. Hopefully it stays on vacation, but I can't imagine that 24/7. It's just horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, and mine's just—it's manageable, or I've just gotten to the point where I don't know. I'm not sure. I do take gabapentin at night, and it's a big difference in whether I'm going to have trouble going to sleep and wake up every hour to hour and a half to move, versus going to sleep and sleeping longer periods of time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's times when I've slept through the night or I just woke up once, which is actually probably closer to the norm than waking up multiple times during the night. So as much as I would rather not have to take the gabapentin, I mean, it's the impact that it has is considerable.
And having undisturbed sleep, having enough REM sleep, so many scientific papers have come out. I just, as my survey of one, it's crucial.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I'm shoulder wise that I'm starting to get to is, on days when my shoulders are acting up, I can't sleep. I can only sleep flat on my back. And even there, it kind of hurts. But if I roll over to one side or the other on the shoulder where I'm most comfortable, that hurts.
Yeah.
The people that I know that, a lot of the people that I know that have pulled the trigger on shoulder surgery, it's been one of two things. Either they lose so much movement that they just, you know, they can't drive or do what they wanted. But even more than that is it gets to the point where they can't sleep anymore. And they say, you know what, 3 to 6 months in a power chair and having attendant care is better than this amount of pain and no sleep. Thank goodness we're at a day where that's at least an option.
The new
reverse shoulder stuff where there's a lot of shoulder surgeries 15-20 years ago that wasn't even an option. It's just, well, you know, it's gonna get worse, then you're gonna die. Looking at some of these options, it's like, ooh, I don't know if I want to go through that and all the rehab. Well, it's compared to X amount of time ago where at least it's an option on the table for you. Oh, okay. That's good. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just looked over and we're at about the 50 minute mark, which is where we try to hold things. And
cool.
You know, and I'll tell you, you know, it's been, we didn't even get to the funny stories. we'll have to do that. We'll have to do a part two.
Part two. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. For anybody listening, or if you watch the YouTube video, like Bob said, I mean, just, you know, check it. Do they go to actually the New Mobility site and put your name in to get the article?
If you go to, it's newmobility.com. And then in the search engine, if you just type in my name, Bob Vogel, V-O-G-E-L, you'll get, you know, you'll get my millions of stories, it seems like. And then if you want to kind of tune it in a little more, if you do Bob Vogel and then all of the urological stuff, it's called Bladder, two words, Bladder, and then M-A-T-T-E-R-S, Bladder Matters. You'll get that whole series. And then same thing, just P-A-R-A, I think it's a / medic, or just the word para, P-A-R-A, and then medic. And it'll pull up all that stuff. Or, you know, if you just kind of write, and it's been a joy to write for the magazine. I've been able to meet just some of the most amazing, just mind-blowing people ever. And it's been phenomenal to learn so much stuff. You know, that's, although some of the stuff with the, you know, Bladder Matters and paramedic, I almost feel like going to medical school because, you know, I'd be reading about something and then like, oh, you know, I started writing about fractures and I swear, like 2 weeks after I finished the article, I fell forward and fractured a femur and, you know, simple. And I was really, when I was starting to write about osteoporosis and low energy fractures and, you know, back in the day, I'd fall out of my chair, you know, rough and tumble, whatever, 4 or 5 times a week, bounce right up and not a problem. And
yeah,
I swear a month after I wrote, I was, you know, I wasn't hang gliding at 20,000 feet. I wasn't scuba diving with sharks at 130 feet below the water. I was throwing a tennis ball for my dog and I fell forward and I fractured my femur. So, you know, it's, It's been really cool to, part of the fun thing has been able to talk with the leading surgeons and the leading researchers to ask them about this stuff. And doctors are pretty cool because they generally don't have a lot of people saying, hey, because I'm a fan of a brilliant surgeon or a brilliant whatever. And you call, hey, I'm a great fan, man. You get to talk to them and learn a lot. So yeah, look that up and we'll continue with the funny stories next time.
Next time, yeah. And I got some truck doing something outside my window or outside on the street. So this is a perfect time for us to finish up. So, and Bob, hang in there once we finish the recording. So, for those of you who are listening, and thank you for your time and your interest. I hope you continue to listen to more and more of the podcasts that we have. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you know, you're seeing two just handsome gentlemen. and you know, so I'm sure that your time, this 45 to 50 minutes was enjoyable. So anyway, thank you, everybody. And I hope you're with us on the very next one. Take care.